I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Later in the broadcast, when do private beliefs raise questions about fitness for public service? Why the nominee for Surgeon General is sparking this debate. But first, President Bush is pushing ahead with his plans to revive a compromise immigration bill that failed in the Senate last week. He made a rare trip to Capitol Hill yesterday. All of the bill was controversial, but one proposal in particular added fuel to a long-standing cultural flashpoint, the plan to require illegal immigrants to show proficiency with English to qualify for legal residency. It raises the question, do you have to speak English in America? Joining us now to talk about this is Sunu Shandy, a government attorney who recently won a settlement on behalf of employees who had been told they could not speak their native language in their workplace. She joins us from our bureau in New York. And from his home in California, Michael Metzler, president and CEO of the Santa Ana Chamber of Commerce. He spearheads a multi-million dollar program to help non-English speakers in his Orange County area learn the language. Thank you both for being here.
Well, thank you.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting EEOC to take part in this conversation.
Okay, so Sunu, let's start with you. In April, you won a case on behalf of Haitian and Jamaican workers in a nursing home in Flushing, New York. The supervisors, who were themselves immigrants, had told the workers they couldn't speak Creole or Patois. And as I understand it, the key to the case was that other languages were also spoken, but the supervisors seemed to single out the Creole speakers. Is that right? And why was that?
That's right. This was a nursing home setting with a host of minority employees, both as managers and line employees, and most of them worked as nursing assistants. Some of them worked in the recreation departments providing services to the residents of the nursing home. And during their employment, there were many, many instances of discrimination, and one type of discrimination was under national origin, and this was language restriction. And the employees were told, no Haitian Creole. And because of that, we were able to include a language restriction claim in our case. And as part of the settlement, which was in April 2007 for $900,000 on behalf of 29 claimants, the facility had to institute a host of injunctive relief, meaning policies against discrimination. And one of those...
But the language, I'm just sorry, just to understand, the statute doesn't say language per se. It was national origin was the
correct
basis of the success of the claim.
And right. I mean, EEOC is a federal agency. We investigate claims of discrimination, and the legal unit selects some of those charges to bring lawsuits in federal court against, you know, private corporations on behalf of the government. And the bases we have are race, religion, sex, and national origin is one of those. And it's the commission's position is when employers institute restrictive language policies, that violates the law under the national origin claim, particularly when there's no business necessity. And when companies institute the policy against just one group, then those are the clearest cases of all. Certainly there's no business reason if, you know, my coworker can speak in her Asian language, but I can't speak Haitian Creole. That's clear-cut disparate treatment. The harder cases is when there's blanket rules, but even then, you can show that it's discriminatory if there's no business rationale.
Okay, hold on one second. I understand that you mentioned you work for the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. As I understand it, there's been a big increase in these kinds of claims in recent years. That there were 125 similar claims in 2006. There were only 32 in 1996. What's causing the increase?
I think, you know, more minorities are filing charges and being aware of their rights. EEOC is constantly providing outreach to immigrant communities and advocacy groups. I mean, likewise with sexual harassment and other types of discrimination, whenever we resolve a case, we have a press release and we do a lot of outreach. And that's part of our mandate and to litigate in the public interest and to let employees know that these are violations of the law. And likewise, to let employers know how they can, you know, not run afoul of Title VII.
I want to bring Mr. Metzler in just a minute, but before I do, Sunu, I just wanted to ask you, is it unreasonable to ask people to speak English in a diverse workplace? I mean, everybody knows from the time you're in elementary school and other kids are whispering or passing notes, it makes people uncomfortable when they don't know what other people are saying in a public space. So is it inherently discriminatory to say to people, it's a diverse workplace, we have lots of things going on here, you're in a public place, we prefer that everybody speak English because it tamps down suspicion, division, etc.?
Just like any discrimination claim, what we do is we analyze the employer's behavior and motivations. For example, in the Highland Hospital case that was settled in May 2006, we resolved at no Spanish policy that the hospital instituted. This was a hospital in Rochester, and the reason that was told was, this is America, speak English. These Hispanic janitors and housekeepers had been working there for years with a Hispanic supervisor and doing their job well. There was no safety reason or any sort of business reason. The reason that was given, this is America, speak English. In those cases, we do find that it's discriminatory and there's no business rationale for these policies. And that's the analysis we do when we look at discrimination claims.
Mr. Metzler, Santa Ana's Hispanic immigrant population, as I understand it, is really now about 79% of the city population. So how did the chamber come up with the idea of helping to pay for English classes? Why did you feel that was necessary?
Well, the mission of our organization, of course, is to grow economic prosperity for our city and region. And in our research, we found out from the business marketplace that the number one demand they had in trying to find capable workers was that they needed to speak English. And then from our residential population, of which you just cited is mostly Hispanic, we found out from that population as well that their number one degree by far was that they wanted to learn English to get those jobs. So we saw a perfect chance to broker a solution for our community that serves both places, the businesses and our Hispanic residents, and create greater economic prosperity.
Was it a case that there were jobs that were going begging that you could not fill because people didn't have the language skills to do them?
Yes, we've been hearing that for quite some time now. Again, within the research, 75% of all the businesses in our region will not hire somebody if they don't speak English because they need that skill for their particular business and the marketplace. So those jobs have been gone begging, many of them, because there's not enough local workers that speak English, perhaps, for that business, and they have to reach outside the region, and that creates other, you know, transportation issues, reliability issues, and so it just isn't working, and we just need to have more people speaking English. That's what everybody wants, even those who don't speak it.
But, Mr. Metzler, I guess what I wanted to ask is, what was the case for business necessity as opposed to the attitude that Sanu was talking about earlier, which is, this is America, speak English. We just think you should speak English. How did you know it was business necessity?
Well, because of our surveys. We do a lot of research. We're very evidence-based. And so in doing that and reaching out to the marketplace to understand what their needs are in terms of reliable, qualified workers, that popped up big. And as a result of that, we wanted to try and satisfy that demand from both sides, the employers as well as our Hispanic residents for jobs.
What has been the response? Have you had a lot of takers for the classes?
We have. As a result of our marketing campaign, we're going at this from two fronts. On the one hand, we've partnered with our community college district that has an expansive English as a second language program throughout the community. They have about 80 separate sites at which they provide the service. And the Latino marketplace in Santa Ana did not understand that or know about it. So our marketing campaign has certainly let them know where these classes are, and that has driven up both phone calls and visits and website attraction to the community college program. So that's going up. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, we do have a number of our local residents that for one reason or another cannot physically get to those classes at those particular times. So what do we do about them? Well, We've researched the marketplace, and we've hooked up and partnered with a company called the Retention Education here in Orange County that has a tool kit that they have developed in collaboration with LeapFrog Technologies. Most people who have young children or grandchildren know that product. And we've been able to work with them to get those particular tool kits into the hands of our local residents, and we're subsidizing that by corporate support.
Is anybody against this effort?
You know, the only people, and there's only been a couple of people who have told us that they're against this, happen to come at it from that political or ideological point of view. But otherwise, no, the vast majority has been in favor of it, and the attention for the program ever since we launched the PR campaign has been enormous. It really actually took us by surprise.
That people really want this service. It was a question of them not being able to access it. It wasn't that they didn't want to learn. They just didn't have a way to learn.
No, that's right. They wanted it. We're not forcing this on anybody. Both the Hispanic marketplace throughout our community, through our surveys, told us that this is the number one need they had. Number two was housing. But number one, by far, went off the charts, was they wanted to learn English.
Senator, there have been congressional resolutions that declare English the national language. Do these have any legal effect? And if there were to be, these have been resolutions so far, but if there were to be a law designating English as the national language, what effect would this have about the use of language in the workplace?
In terms of disparate treatment claims, which is treating one group different than another, it would have no impact at all, because that is certainly about how laws and guidelines are implemented. So in that way, it wouldn't affect a disparate treatment kind of a claim. And just, we actually think, you know, the program to help people to learn English is commendable. They actually do that through my church. The issue is disciplining people for saying adios as they're clocking out, which is what happened in the Highland Hospital case. The issue is when there's a discriminatory animus, which leads to adverse workplace actions, which then go into your file. So it's not really about, you know, proficiency or mm-hmm. anyone being against people learning mm-hmm. English. It's about employees being terminated, disciplined, and harassed for speaking in another language other than English in the workplace.
Okay.
When there's, it's really based on a discriminatory animus and not any sort of
demonstrated business reason. Okay, Mike, last question for you. Some people argue that from the standpoint of the global marketplace, the real problem is Americans don't speak enough languages. So I just want to ask you, do you speak any languages other than English?
I do not. I speak a little bit of Spanish, but I do not. But I would say that while I'm sure that's true, I think it's not lost on many of us in terms of English language comprehension, that when we realize the country in the world that speaks or has the most English-speaking people happens to be China.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Very interesting. Thanks a lot. We're joined by Michael Metzler, president of the Santa Ana Chamber of Commerce, and by Sunu Chandy, senior trial attorney for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. She joined us from our New York Bureau. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.